From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this Wednesday edition of Washington Watch. Word out today that the long-awaited special counsel's report on the Russia investigation is reportedly complete and will soon be in the hands of the Department of Justice. Congressman Mike Johnson, a member of the House Judiciary Committee, is here. I'll also talk with him about a push from a coalition of atheists to urge Democrats to drop So Help Me God from the oaths. We'll talk about that. Also, America is responding to the overreach of the abortion industry and their political lackeys like New York Governor Andrew Cuomo. Now, policymakers like those in Arkansas are making clear where they stand. Governor Asa Hutchinson signed a measure into law yesterday that will make abortion illegal when the Supreme Court returns the issue to the states. Now, citizens are also speaking out. Elizabeth Johnston, a.k.a. the activist mommy, joins me about the upcoming day of mourning in Albany, New York, in reaction to the passage of the most extreme abortion law in America. That's a little bit later here on Washington Watch. Also, you may have heard the Byrne use social media yesterday to announce his socialist campaign for president. What is he promising others with your money? We'll talk about it later here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. All right. The Mueller report is reportedly complete. And word today is that it'll soon be in the hands of the Department of Justice, which means Congress may soon get a look at it. Joining us now to talk about this is a member of the House Judiciary Committee. Congressman Mike Johnson of Louisiana represents the 4th Congressional District of Louisiana. Mike, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. Great to be with you, as always.
And I should mention also the chairman of the House Republican Study, the largest conservative caucus in the House. All right. Great anticipation has been with this report. A lot of people have been waiting for the special counsel to release this report that's been almost 2 years in the making. What do you anticipate?
Well, I anticipate a fight, first of all, about the contents of the report. As you know, the rules that the Department of Justice is operating with special counsel is that once a report is finished, the report it only has to be turned in to one person, and that's the Attorney General of the United States. The Attorney General then has the responsibility and the decision about whether or not to release that to either the Congress or the public at large. And they take great caution, as you know, to protect what might be deemed sensitive information. They don't want to disparage innocent people who might be mentioned in it who have not had criminal charges filed against them. They certainly don't want to release any national security interest or anything that might adversely affect that. So, you know, William Barr, the new attorney general, will have a big decision to make, and I suspect will have a big fight with the Democrats in Congress about what are the contours of that report and how much of it needs to be released.
I would think that, you know, they're going to say, because William Barr pointed by the president, that he's covering something up. So I think the pressure will be on to release all of the report. But that may not work to the advantage of Democrats, as if, I should say, it's like some of the Senate report last week saying there was no collusion. This may simply, erode the whole foundation that the Democrats have tried to build over this investigation.
I don't think there's any doubt about that. And it will, we expect, erode the entire narrative that they've been painting for the last more than 2 years now, that Trump colluded with the Russians. Look, as you mentioned, I'm on the House Judiciary Committee. We've seen a lot of this evidence, some of it behind closed doors, as all of this has developed over the last couple of years. And there really isn't any smoking gun, not that any of us have seen. And as the Senate has now disclosed, they haven't seen it either. So, we suspect that this is going to be an anticlimactic, lackluster report by Mueller. And I think that the Democrats are going to, have a lot of chagrin about that. And it will erode that narrative. So it'll be interesting to see what the reaction is on the Hill and how they push back and what they do from this point forward.
I'm sure they'll find some nugget in there that they'll latch on to try to make more noise or at least build this perception that more hearings in the House are needed. But, I mean, this is a pretty exhaustive investigation that Robert Mueller has been involved in.
It is, and he's had, you know, unlimited resources, effectively, to complete this investigation, unlimited manpower. He's had everything at his disposal, and he's been at it for, you know, 2 years. So if there were any smoking guns, you could be assured that he would have found them by now, and we probably would have heard about it by now. So I think this is the end to this is a long time coming. I'm very grateful that apparently it is finally coming to an end, because I think that the country needs to move beyond it. I hope that our colleagues on the other side of the aisle don't drag this out in a nasty partisan dispute for another 2 years. But, you know, I won't be surprised if some of that happens.
One final question on this topic, Congressman Mike Johnson. You alluded a little bit to the process. How long might this be before the American public gets some idea of what is in this report?
Well, I think that the Attorney General has discretion over the timetable. I suspect, and based upon his comments thus far, I think William Barr would like to get the summary report issued as quickly as possible, because he knows a lot of people in the country are waiting on that. You know, the question is, as we said at the outset here, what happens next? Some of the chairmen, Democrat chairmen of our various committees in the House, have already said that they want to subpoena the full report, and they think they have a right to see it, and the public does as well. There may be another court battle over that, and ultimately it may be the courts that have to decide whether and how much of it is actually formally released. But we'll just have to see who makes the next move and how it happens from this point. But hopefully the end of this comes sooner than later.
Let's transition to another topic. In fact, you were on a couple of weeks ago. We were discussing this and actually played a clip from you in the Judiciary Committee when a witness was sworn in with the absence of the word "so help me God." You challenged the chairman on that, and he administered the oath. But now reports that there is a coalition of atheists and secularists that are working to pressure the Democratic leadership to drop this phrase from the oath. So what do we know about this?
Yeah, it's very interesting. You know, we thought that this controversy may be going away. We called the Democrat leaders, the chairman of the various committees, on the absence of the phrase "so help me God" and the oaths administered to witnesses to Congress, a practice, by the way, as you and I have discussed, that goes literally back to the founding of our country. They apparently had a concentrated effort to try to take it out now, because apparently people are offended by that phrase. We called them on it, and they changed course and they added it back in. Now there's a coalition of atheists and secularist groups who have gotten together. They want to push back the other way. So it will be interesting to see how the Democrat chairman of the various committees respond to all this, and if they give in to these radical secularist demands. I can tell you that we're working on this already. I filed a bill last week, House Resolution 110. We have 34 co-sponsors on that legislation already, and I suspect we'll have scores more once we get back on the Hill next week. But this is a bill that would formally draft the oath that every witness would have to take in the Congress, and we will include "so help me God" as the founders did, and everyone has over the last 2.5 centuries almost. So we'll see how that goes. I think that legislation would have a good chance to pass, and it'll be very interesting to see if Pelosi and company will allow us to put it on the floor and get some of these folks on record about exactly where they stand.
Now, Mike, some would say, well, you know, this is just a phrase in the oath. It's important, but it's more symbolic. But really, this is representative of what the left is trying to do in remove God and any recognition that there is a higher authority from the ranks of government. I mean, and from at every level.
That's exactly right. And it's more than symbolism for more reasons than just that. Look, there's a reason the founders included this phrase, and it goes along with all the long cherished traditions we've had in this country. The founders understood that all men are fallen. That was their worldview that they operated from. And so they knew that because of the fall, that power corrupts. They also knew that there's no amount of institutional checks and balances or decentralization of power and civil authorities that would be sufficient to maintain a just government if the men in charge had no fear of any eternal judgment. You know, there had to be a power, the founders thought, higher than our temporal institutions to keep people honest. And that's why they included the phrase. That's why it's so important. That's why it's part of the cherished tradition, the fabric of who we are as Americans. And we should not abandon it now just because a few people are offended by the name of God and think that political correctness should rule the day. It shouldn't. And I think the vast majority of the American people agree with us on this.
Well, I would say the polling I have seen on Americans wanting their elected officials to believe in God is overwhelming. And I think it's for those very reasons you laid out. I think people want to know that at least the politicians have a good chance of thinking someone's watching when the voters are not. And God right. is ever present, sees everything. And so I think there is, that has been a long tradition. But it's more than just tradition. It is of great substance. And speaking of that, you and I are going to be doing an event this coming weekend in Bossier in Louisiana, First Baptist Church, Bossier City, Louisiana. We're going to do kind of addressing these issues, answers for our times. Tell our listeners a little bit about what they will be a part of if they can join us this coming Sunday.
Yeah, you know, we've created a seminar out of necessity to answer some of the big questions that a lot of people have nowadays. This is a seminar for certainly every Christian, every believer that's concerned about our nation. A lot of people are just wringing their hands over what's happening in the country, and they want to know if our, you know, these deep traditions, long-held traditions, cherished heritage that we have as a Christian nation can be preserved, And if we have any responsibility to be involved in that, changing the culture, you know, what does the Bible say about all these problems and issues? So we're going to address all of that in a seminar. It's this Sunday night, as you mentioned, February 24th from 4 to 9 p.m. If you're anywhere in the vicinity of Northwest Louisiana, it's in Bossier City, hosted at First Bossier, First Baptist Bossier Church there, the big mega church there. And it's a free event. So anybody can sign up and go to firstbossier.com at the events page and register. And we got limited seating. It's going to be a packed house and a great time. And we're delighted that you're coming in town for that, Tony. A lot of people are really excited about you being here.
Looking forward to it. Looking forward to being with you and your wife, Kelly, as we do this seminar. And, of course, that Sunday morning, I'll be speaking in the morning service there at Bossier First Baptist. So look forward to being with you. And, Mike, thanks for taking time out to join us this afternoon.
As always, my friend. Travel safe. We'll see you this weekend.
Okay. Congressman Mike Johnson of Shreveport, Louisiana. And if you'd like to find out more, if you're, as he said, within driving distance of Shreveport, Bossier City, go to TonyPerkins.com, follow links over. We got it posted there. You can register right there following the links. And again, that's this coming Sunday from 4 p.m. till 9 p.m. It'll be a seminar. It's based on a seminar I used to do, God and Government. And we'll be diving into these issues, equipping you as Christian citizens. How to be good citizens, how to make a difference, how to stand up in a day and time in which these values are under attack, these truths. And again, I'll be speaking Sunday morning at the services there at First Baptist Bossier. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, when we come back, we're going to be joined by Activist Mommy. Responses all across the country. We're seeing at the state level, state legislatures passing laws trying to protect the unborn. Saw it yesterday in Arkansas. Well, citizens are getting in on this as well. Activist Mommy spearheading a rally in Albany, New York, right there at the seat of government. She joins us next with all the details. Don't go away. More Washington Watch still to come.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy that inspire us from childhood, such as unicorns and the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being, from the Loch Ness Monster to big tax refunds. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. Since 1973, these abortion myths have grown a substantial foothold in developing a climate of fear, misinformation, and a culture of death in the United States. In FRC's new analysis, learn whether most Americans support abortion on demand and if a fetus does in fact feel pain in the womb. Join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
The world on our horizon isn't like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener. Homemade meals now replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. I don't even know what a goji berry is. My church started offering free Wi-Fi and changed their name from First Baptist to Radiant Water Life something or other. They even started posting video sermons recorded on wood pallet backgrounds that sync directly to a Dropbox that I have yet to locate. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council's Stand Firm app. Put down your quill and contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet. Share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Read the Washington Update and listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This thing's got it all, buddy boy. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. As we've discussed here multiple times, on January the 22nd, 46th anniversary of the infamous Roe v. Wade decision, New York passed an expanded abortion access bill that literally brings abortion up to the birth of the baby. Now, to celebrate this unbelievable depravity, they rejoiced in the gallery there in the Capitol, but then they lit the One World Trade Center in pink. Now, women used to celebrate motherhood and find joy in their children. Today, in places like New York, they're not all women, but those on the left, those that are pushing this radical agenda, are taking joy in destroying their children and America's future. The state of New York has, I believe, crossed a line of inhumanity that should drive all of us to our knees. And that's what my next guest, Elizabeth Johnston, known better as the activist mommy, has organized, a day of mourning, which takes place this coming Saturday, February the 23rd, from 1 to 4 p.m. in Albany, New York, the seat of government there in New York. And you can learn more at dayofmourning.org or go to tonyperkins.com and follow the links over. Elizabeth, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. Good to be back with you.
Hey, first, before we get into the subject, I just want to congratulate you on the publication of your book, Not on My Watch, How to Win the Fight for Family, Faith, and Freedom. I like the tagline, good subject matter, and congratulations.
Thank you so much. The response has been absolutely overwhelming.
Well, you've been out there fighting and making a difference and bringing others into this fight for life, for family, for faith, and you're calling for a national day of mourning and repentance in the wake of what happened in New York. Explain to our listeners why.
Yeah, Tony, my inboxes have been flooded ever since Cuomo and the radical feminists signed and celebrated that law. People are pleading with me, what can we do? We want to get off of the sidelines and onto the front lines and rescue these babies. When are you going to New York, they're saying. And so we have organized the day of mourning on the 23rd. We are asking the whole country to wear black, not shop, close down your businesses, and repent with us for the sin of abortion. Tony, this is not just a policy issue, a horizontal issue. This is a vertical issue. We have got to get the heart of God on this matter. And clearly, not only, you know, the radical left, but even God's people, we have not had God's heart on this matter. We have not been the good Samaritan. We have passed by these babies that have been executed, 3,000 of them a day. And so we are asking God to have mercy on us, to give us his heart, to forgive us for our apathy and complacency. And the response has been unbelievable. We're sold out at the Albany, New York event. We're desperately looking for more locations in Albany so that we can hold all the overflow people that are going to be there. We're simulcasting now to 21 cities. God has been very gracious to us, and his hand is on this event. And we want all of your listeners to go to dayofmourning.org and see how you can get connected.
Yeah, I think it's extremely important as we talk about these policy issues, because it's policy, it's political, but more than that, it is a moral and a spiritual issue. As we have seen the encroachment of the political realm into those matters that are inherently spiritual, moral, the church has backed away. And we've allowed this to be reduced to nothing more than a political, you know, ping pong ball back and forth. But this really is a defining moment for the nation.
You're right. And, you know, children, babies should not be used as political pawns and chess pieces. And that's what we've been doing in the Republican Party, unfortunately. And what we're doing on Saturday is we are standing in the gap and interposing for not only these babies, but for our nation right now, Tony, because the blood of these babies is crying out to God, and we are in deep trouble. And you know that a nation that kills its babies will not last long. And so we're standing in the gap like Moses did for the Hebrews, like Esther did for the Hebrews, and we're crying out for God to spare us and give us his heart and visit us with national spiritual awakening and revival. We've got the Benham Brothers speaking, Black conservative David J. Harris is speaking. We've got an 8-year-old abortion survivor. It is going to be so powerful, Tony. We also need a little bit more money to finish paying off all of the expenses. So there's a donate button on thedayofmourning.org. If your generous listeners could bless us with just a little bit of money, that would be so amazing for this cause. It's going to be an amazing day.
And as you said, this will be simulcasted into about 20 other states around the nation, correct?
Yes, sir. You can see where it's being simulcasted if you scroll down to the bottom of the website, dayofmourning.org. That will take you to the event pages so that you can connect with the locals there in your area.
All right. Very good. Well, we will encourage our folks to visit dayofmourning.org. And be sure and keep an eye on the Benham Brothers when they're up there in New York.
They're nothing but trouble.
I know. Tell them I'm going to be watching them.
I will. God bless you, Tony.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Elizabeth Johnson, activist mommy. To find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. You can follow the links over to dayofmourning.org. If you can participate in that, do. If you live in New York or nearby, join them. Even if you got to stand outside, that sends a strong message. But you can also check out where it is being simulcasted, and you can participate that way. And maybe you just make a contribution to help them underwrite this effort. This is, you know, as she said, as we were discussing, it's not just a political issue. Yes, it's a policy issue that we've got to be engaged in. But beyond that, and more significant than that, this is a moral issue. And I said this, I think, last week. I believe the president in his State of the Union address, when he called out to Congress to stop infanticide, I believe the president, in his way, was putting before the nation a choice of life and death, a blessing and a curse. Folks, how long will we be able to stay at this point where we're wrestling over abortion? 60 million babies have died? At what point does God say enough is enough? We are very close to seeing, I believe, America return to being a pro-life, predominantly pro-life nation again. I think the court could take this up and essentially repent, which means to change direction and turn this issue back to the states where, again, overwhelmingly the states embrace life. All right, when we come back, Bernie Sanders, the Bern, jumping into the presidential 2020 election. We'll talk about it next. Don't go away.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy that inspire us from childhood, such as unicorns and the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being, from the Loch Ness Monster to big tax refunds. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. Since 1973, these abortion myths have grown a substantial foothold in developing a climate of fear, misinformation, and a culture of death in the United States. In FRC's new analysis, learn whether most Americans support abortion on demand, and if a fetus does in fact feel pain in the womb. Join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website is tonyperkins.com. Still to come, we're going to be taking your phone calls. But first, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders used a video on Facebook yesterday to announce his bid for president in 2020. His almost 11-minute-long message was focused primarily on President Trump, backfilled with promises of free stuff. Play clip number three.
All as I do. That we are living in a pivotal and dangerous moment in American history. We are running against a president who is a pathological liar, a fraud, a racist, a sexist, a xenophobe, and someone who is undermining American democracy as he leads us in an authoritarian direction.
Now, it doesn't take Sherlock Holmes to detect that the Democrats, like the media, think they have a winning strategy in trying to make Trump into a political Frankenstein. Now, ask the media how that's worked out. It's not shaken his supporters one bit. In fact, it has only strengthened their resolve in supporting President Trump. Because as they see it, if the media that mocks their faith and the left that calls them bigots because of their moral values hates Trump, well, he must be on the right track as president. You know, other than the rant on Trump, the burn just picked up where he left off in 2016, promising free stuff in exchange for support. Play clip number six.
3 years ago, during our 2016 campaign, when we brought forth our progressive agenda, we were told that our ideas were radical and they were extreme. We were told that Medicare for All, a $15 an hour minimum wage, free tuition at public colleges and universities, aggressively combating climate change, demanding that the wealthy start paying their fair share of taxes. We were told that all of these concepts were ideas that the American people would never accept. Well, 3 years have come and gone, and as a result of millions of Americans standing up and fighting back, all of these policies and more are now supported by a majority of Americans.
Well, his policies and proposals are still radical and extreme. But let's define the term progressive. You know, as he used it, he said, we're bringing forth our progressive agenda. What is progressive? Well, progressive is a synonym for socialist, which is a political and economic theory of social organization which advocates that the means of production, distribution, and exchange should be owned or regulated by the community as a whole. Now, the left at this point is not calling for a socialist government in the Marxist-Leninist sense, where the government literally controls the economy. What they want to do is use as much of the proceeds from the market to advance their socialist agenda. Now, the problem with this is this leads to more and more government intervention in the economic markets, which creates greater uncertainty and ultimately instability, which reduces the output, or what is called the GDP, the gross domestic product. This leads to situations like Venezuela. Now, Venezuela was not a pure socialist country. They had free markets. It was just that they had increasingly the government was intervening in the markets to try to take more out in order to fuel their socialist programs. That's actually been happening in America. But now the veneer is off, and they're going whole hog for a socialist agenda. Now, one point I want to make about his free public college and university tuition. Now, there's a reason they want to make public colleges and universities free, like Elizabeth Warren's proposal yesterday that we talked about, that will squeeze out church and private daycare programs. This is just another way to ensure, in their mind, the proper indoctrination of future voters. I mean, think about it for a moment. If those going into college have a choice of free public tuition at a public university or going to a conservative Christian private college or university, where are they going to go? Again, this is about making sure that children are funneled into a pipeline and kept there until they are fully indoctrinated. Now, I mentioned this yesterday, and we're almost out of time in this segment, but America, I mean, these people, a lot of these folks hate the fact that America is successful. Now, in 2018, America did and does, and they have the largest portion of the world's wealth. Out of the $317 trillion in global wealth in 2018, America had $98 trillion. But what does America do with that? Well, America is one of the most giving nations in all the world. And I'm not talking about government giving. I'm talking about individuals who give. When the world hurts, America gives. America ranks near the top consistently of the nations that give the most. In fact, in 2018, they gave away over $400 billion. And we talk about the poor that Bernie wants to focus on. Well, the poor in America live better than most middle class in different parts of the world. America is successful because of its free market economy. And everyone benefits from that. But they're talking about killing it. All right, folks, don't go away. We're coming back with more Washington Watch and your phone calls in just a moment. Don't go away.
The world on our horizon is like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener. Homemade meals now replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. I don't even know what a goji berry is. My church started offering free Wi-Fi and changed their name from First Baptist to Radiant Water Life something or other. They even started posting video sermons recorded on wood pallet backgrounds that sync directly to a Dropbox that I have yet to locate. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council's Stand Firm app. Put down your quill and contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet. Share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Read the Washington Update and listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This thing's got it all, buddy boy. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy, from unicorns to the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. In FRC's analysis, 10 Myths on Abortion, join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to our other free resources, go to frc.org/connect.
I'm Tony Perkins, and you are listening to Washington Watch. The website is tonyperkins.com. Okay, the phone number. We're going to go to the phones here in just a moment. Folks calling in, 866-372-7234. That's 866-FRC-RADIO. Okay, before I do, though, I want to finish my conversation here that we're having about the burn. Now, here is one of, and I made reference to this yesterday, but I thought I'd read it today. This is one of Aesop's fables that you probably will not find in one of Elizabeth Warren's daycares or Bernie's universities. It's the goose and the golden egg. There was once a countryman who possessed the most wonderful goose you can imagine. For every day when he visited the nest, the goose had laid a beautiful, glittering golden egg. The countryman took the eggs to the market and soon began to get rich. But it was not long before he grew impatient with the goose because she gave him only a single golden egg a day. He was not getting rich fast enough. Then one day, after he had finished counting his money, the idea came to him that he could get all the golden eggs at once by killing the goose and cutting it open. But when the deed was done, not a single golden egg did he find, and his precious goose was dead. The moral is, those who have plenty want more, and so lose all they have. Or you can refer to Proverbs 23:5. Will you set your eyes on that which is not? For riches certainly make themselves wings. They fly away like an eagle toward heaven. That's what I see socialists pursuing. America's freedom, economic freedom, they talk about the inequities. It's not perfect. But it is the best system out there, and it has produced more opportunity and more and increased the standard of living for the entire world, because Americans have had the freedom to engage in markets that are free for the most part. Increasingly, government's intervention has created problems. But of course, some would say, well, but there's so many you've got crooks, and you had the Wall Street issues, you had the banking scandals. Well, that is true. The free market truly works when there is a moral foundation. But this is what's happened, is we've pushed more of God and morality out of the public square. There's a vacuum that's been created. And so you have growing inequities. You have problems. You have people who are taken advantage of. But the answer, my friend, is not to allow the government to control it. The answer is to turn America back to that moral foundation. All right, 866-372-7234. Let's go to Teresa in Indiana. Teresa, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, thank you, Tony, for taking my call. I've just been thinking about this whole saga that's been happening in the public square with this, from when the Affordable Health Care Act was passed on and up until this point now. And I wanted to say that, you know, Margaret Thatcher was right when she said that sooner, the problem with socialism is that sooner or later you run out of other people's money. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to add to that, if Bernie Sanders really stands for what he says, and Elizabeth Warren really stands for what they're saying, then they should sell everything that they have and donate it to the poor of this country and to the world.
Interesting challenge, Teresa. Thanks so much for listening and calling in. Here's that really calls them out, because what they want to do is they want you to sell what you have and give to the poor. Actually, they don't want you to sell it. They just want to take it from you. And that's interesting, because I've had this discussion, debate, if you will, with I'm trying to figure out how to describe this. Individuals who are on the left and claim to be evangelicals, who will often quote scripture. In fact, one time, using that very verse that you made reference to, when the rich young ruler came to Jesus and said, you know, what do I have to do to follow you to be saved? And he said, well, you know, I've kept all the commandments and I've done all this. And he says, well, sell all that you have and give to the poor. Well, the left has used that as justification that we're, as a government, to care for the poor. That's an individual instruction. There's no instruction in Scripture that, that the government is to care for or take from you to give to somebody else. That is not in Scripture. They would also use the account in Acts where the New Testament believers, the early church, sold all that they had everything in common. Again, they were not coerced to do that. They were not forced by the government to do that. They did that voluntarily, and you can still do that today. So it's interesting, those that want to accuse evangelical Christians of trying to create a theocracy in this country are the very ones that are trying to apply individual scriptural principles and instruction to the individual, to the government. Teresa, thanks so much for the call. Very provocative. All right, let's go to Dan in Kansas. Dan, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you. I just had a quick comment, and you see the numbers of immigrants coming across the border every day, about 2,700 a day, I believe. And then to see, on the other hand, we've got about 3,000 abortions a day, which supposedly they want more people for labor, for the economy and such, to keep things going here. And yet we're making a larger number of them disappear. One comes at great expense and the other one comes at great profit. Just share your thoughts on that. Thank you.
Dan, thanks so much for the call. Actually reminded me, I had another clip I wanted to play of Bernie's announcement discussing, I had one that he mentioned the immigration issue, but he has another one here that he talks about. Let me just play his clip. Bobby, play clip number four.
I'm running for president because a great nation is judged not by how many billionaires and nuclear weapons it has, but by how it treats the most vulnerable. The elderly, the children, our veterans, the sick, and the poor.
And what prompted me to think of that was, as you talked about, the number of abortions in this country each day. and he did not support the, protecting infants who were born. We'll see what he does on Monday when that bill comes before the Senate. The Senate will be voting on the S-311, which is the Born Alive Survivors Protection Act. We'll see where he stands on that. But you're right. The hypocrisy here is it's just unbelievable. For conservatives, most, I would say, I can't speak for every conservative, but for me, I welcome legal immigration. I am thankful that people want to come to America, be a part of the experience of being Americans, become a part of the American family. But they have to do that legally. That's the only issue. And so in order to protect our country, we've got to have borders. There's nothing wrong with that. And Bernie would suggest that there is. And I think the main reason you see the Democrats on this is because increasingly they are pandering to those who are illegally coming to this country in order to attract them as voters, in some cases voting illegally. All right, going to continue the phone calls here, 866-372-7234. Let's go to Bill in Ponca City, Oklahoma. Bill, welcome to Washington Watch.
Yes, sir. All right, thanks for taking my call. My observation is that the abortions going on in New York, and it seems that it's the tide is going over to the Satan worshipers. That's already, they also have an arch to Baal in New York already. And then a while back, I think a couple of days, the Satanic Temple, one member was saying that her constitutional right was being taken from her because she had to go through a 72-hour waiting period to have an abortion. And then in one city, the Satanic Temple insisted that they open at a council meeting with a prayer to Satan, and they were allowed to. Yet people want to take down the cross because it might have a bad influence on people. And that this seemed to be with the vacuum that's filling up. They're giving in to Satan. And what made it so bad, one person said, when they had the demon in Arkansas with the Ten Commandments, one said, why can't we have both? It seemed like that's so, the Bible illiteracy, it seemed to be at a rapid pace to me.
Bill, you are right in that whatever moral vacuum is created, it's going to be filled by something. And that's why we have to continue to advocate for religious freedom, the ability to live out our faith in a way that influences and affects the world around us. Bill, thanks so much for the call. Let's go to Patricia in Kansas City, Missouri. Patricia, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, thank you, Tony. Just wanted to make a quick comment about capitalism and socialism. And just if we understand the difference with capitalism, we have the economic freedom and the right of people to exchange things voluntarily and free from force. And it's just a peaceful means of exchange. So if I do something good for you, then you can also do something good for me. But with socialism, I think when you mention about it ends up with the population owning things. But if everybody owns things, then no one really owns it, mm-hmm. And so you lose private ownership. But beyond that, that's not even possible because you're going to have this small group of central planners who are ultimately running everything. And so really, it's really a fallacy because it's an either-or. And so they don't want capitalism, but they want socialism, and that's not better. It's worse because you still have sinners in both. But at least capitalism, we are more closely joined to the biblical mandate of how we should use money.
Well said, Patricia. As we've seen those socialistic countries, they don't work out so well. Now, I will say this. I'm going to probably do a little bit more on this in the coming weeks. I was talking with Scott Rasmussen, the pollster, this weekend. And he's been doing some polling, and he said, most Americans really don't know what socialism is. And when they, subscribe to or say they're okay with socialism, and not a majority does, but, they're warming up to it, their definition of socialism is not really socialistic. And so part of it is the definition of the terms. But in terms of your description, you are absolutely right. Patricia, thanks so much for the call. The thing about it is, the capitalist system, and again, it's not perfect, And it has to be bridled by morality, just as our government works. As John Adams said, our system of government is for a moral and a religious people. It is wholly inadequate for the government of any other, because we would throw off the restraints like a whale goes through a net. And so there was this understanding that America would first be, the Americans, I should say, would first be governed by themselves, by the Ten Commandments, this moral code. And so with that understanding that each and every one of us governed first ourselves, then collectively it was easier as a country to be governed. But once we throw off the moral restraint, the self-government, that's when things begin to implode. The same is true in our economic exchanges. If we are not honest, where the Ten Commandments says that we're not to steal, well, if we throw that off and we are all about trying to get the most for ourselves without any concern for our neighbor, well, then there's problems there. But it's still better than a socialist model or a communist model, because there you take away the incentive to do good, to grow, to expand. All right, very quickly, let's get to Dan in Texas. Dan, 30 seconds.
Hey, Tony, appreciate you taking the call. Listen, just wanted to make a comment. You were talking about abortion earlier, and if you think about it, abortion is the ultimate hate crime. What you've done is you've taken a selfish individual who decides to terminate a life, an innocent life, and it really is a hate crime. Also, all of these New York legislators who are just so joyful about late-term abortion really are accomplices to a hate crime, if you think about it. And that's the way we should deal with abortion.
Dan, very interesting point. It is amazing how abortion is like set off into a class by itself. Because you're absolutely right. I mean, it's taking the life of another individual. I mean, we know scientifically that baby is a separate human being. It has its own genetic makeup. It is completely separate. I mean, it's attached for a while in the mother. It is the mother is the host, but it is a separate living individual. Nowhere else can you take the life of another human being. Folks, out of time. I want to thank you for joining us. I do want to encourage you, visit the website, tonyperkins.com. You can find out more about this weekend's events, the one with Elizabeth Johnson in Albany, New York. See if you can participate in that. And also, again, if you're in the area of Shreveport, Bossier City, Louisiana, join Congressman Mike Johnson and me on Sunday. To find out more, go to tonyperkins.com. All right, until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.